weather's got to change. Well, I know then the weather's got to change.
Wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasolines. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now your host, Rick Moore.
And here I am. Thank you for listening. And a happy Sunday to everybody out there, especially to those listening on 101.1 over in Crozet and in the Valley's new number. Thank you for being with us in 2011. We will be talking today with our guests, Matt Hodges, president of Compass Home Loans, Jim Duncan, Nest Realty Group. And I'm sure that throughout the hour, Jim will manage to toss out links to his blog. Let's get that out of the way now, because it's actually a pretty cool blog and it has lots of information.
Thanks, Rick.
What's that site?
RealCentralVA.com.
How'd you come up with that? Real Central.
I have absolutely no idea. It was 6 years ago. No, I think it was. I wanted to talk about real estate in the Central Virginia area, and I just put them together.
Yes. It sounds like a Saturday night, about 11:30 decision.
11:45.
Yeah. And Matt, how are you today?
I'm wonderful, thank you.
And thanks both of you for being here. It is a little chilly, and the radio station is often warm, so it's a good spot. Write down the phone number, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS, today's program. Interesting and informative, no matter where you live. All right. So let's jump right into it. We are going to be talking about housing and the economy, foreclosures, how to get loans, all that kind of stuff. So write down your questions. Stretch out your finger muscles, 979-0919. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Matt Hodges, Jim Duncan here in the studio with me today. Guys, whoever wants to jump into this first, major trends from 2010. The year is over however long ago now, and not even a full 10 days. And what can we look back on? Because I think for many people, oh, it's still bad. Everything is bad.
I think looking back at 2010, it's a time, you know, I've been saying this for 3 or 4 years. It was a time of transition, of understanding that the market is constantly changing. I think the Charlottesville area dealt with some of the issues that have been making news nationally with respect to the increase in the number of short sales and foreclosures in our market. I think that we dealt with, in 2010, the psychology of buying and selling and coming to terms of reality. From the seller's point of view, you know, there were fewer transactions, as they've been declining transactions for a number of years. I think we've hit stagnation. And I think that sellers have come to terms with the fact that in order to sell their home, it has to be perfect and it has to be priced aggressively to the market. I think buyers understood in 2010 and continue in 2011 that they are and have been in the driver's seat for a number of years now, and buyers can be choosy and picky. I think that they realize that the amount of inventory on the market is it's misleading, because while there's a ton of inventory, the percentage of quality inventory is lower than some would hope and or expect. I think it's a time. It was 2010 was a you know, more of a crucible than we've seen for a number of years. I think that those who are involved in the industry are having it reaffirmed that in order to do what we do and do it well, we need to be educated, informed, and do this every single day.
You talk about the buyers being in the driver's seat, mm-hmm. And things being priced aggressively. Well, what about the homes that start at $100 million and come down to $24 million?
Yeah, with respect to that, I think it's an evidence of an irrational seller. with who had delusions of a market that wasn't quite there, but also it's a good way to get some press.
Who also used a non-local realtor to list her house.
Oh, yes, we are talking about the Kluge Moses home.
Oh, is that who we were talking about?
Well, that's the one that we are talking about. There might be others. I mean, let's face it, Albemarle County and nearby large homes in our Central Virginia area, probably not the only one. I mean, I guess the only one maybe that I'm aware of to start at $100 million, but there are certainly more than double-digit number of homes to be in double-digit number of millions for sales, right, Mr. Duncan?
Sure thing. I mean, I think that one of the things about the Central Virginia market is that we have the entire gamut of properties. You know, I was showing a $65,000 foreclosure the other day, and we have properties upwards of, you know, 4, 5, 6, 10 million. So it's we have quite the range.
Matt Hodges, president of Compass Home Loans. We were talking about 2010 in the realty side of things. Certainly a lot of stories in the news going on about the financial side from loans and sort of things. What about from your side of the business? What are some of the things that describe 2010?
Yeah, probably the first and foremost item 2010 was January 1st implementation of the change in good faith estimate disclosure. Previously, it was a very simple document. It listed out every line item for what a buyer or someone who's refinancing would expect to pay in that transaction. The government, in their infinite wisdom, decided to change that document to a three-page document that categorized these different fees into clumps that you could not readily decipher. And it put an additional burden on brokers in the world. Now, mind you, I'm not a broker, but I feel for what they've had to go through because now they have a upfront responsibility for disclosure of their income even before a loan perhaps is even locked. So one of the biggest things last year was the good faith estimate change. Another was the loan level pricing adjustments, LLPAs. Fannie and Freddie instituted these additional penalties on people who have lower credit scores. And mind you, I don't mind that. People who pay their bills on time, who have excellent credit, should get the highest or best interest rates possible. It just seems a bit burdensome when we're trying to move inventory, when we're trying to improve this economy, that there are additional penalties that are being thrown into the mix.
We are talking about local housing and economy. We also will get to a little bit of the national scene as well. Our guests today, Matt Hodges and Jim Duncan. I need to thank The Backyard for allowing us to be here today. University's Culinary Secret at the end of Elliewood Avenue across from Para Coffee. Backyard invites you to enjoy outdoor patio seating in their heated tent and try the winter menu. Backyard has seasonal brews on tap and is available for private events. For more info, dial them up, 202-8215, or you can find The Backyard on Facebook. Guys, so a little bit of thoughts on what happened in the last year. We still have 350-some days to go in 2011. What are expectations based on what has happened and discussion, and what are also expectations, especially Matt, on new laws for this year, new Congress, a different style of Congress, or at least expected?
Yeah, there's a true unknown there. If you hear what many of our government representatives are saying, they want to scale back the Fed's influence significantly, where they feel that the Fed has done too much to expose our overall economy in a negative light, where we are spending and essentially printing money to buy back our own bonds, to buy mortgage-backed securities. You know, this what we call QE2, quantitative easing part two of upwards of $900 billion being thrown back into our marketplace. And, you know, that money is essentially just being printed, which theoretically causes inflation into the future. You know, that's a big unknown with the Republicans taking back control of the House. I think you're going to hear a lot more about re-regulation of the Fed than we've heard previously.
I have no idea what quantitative easing part one is. I mean, so can you explain that a little more to me?
Yeah, quantitative easing parts one and two were meant to help stimulate the housing economy to provide interest rates in the long-term basis to be very low. So the idea of going into the marketplace and the Fed, depending on the day, will buy either, you know, $0 of bonds or upwards of $8 billion of a two-year or a 10-year bond. The goal there is, as a buyer of bonds, you're going to push the price up and push the yield down. Pushing the yield down on bonds positively affects interest rates. They keep them low. Well, the stimulus there is that buyers will be able to afford houses where perhaps they could not before, and it will get our housing industry back in a positive mode where people are out there purchasing homes.
Jim, from the realtor side of things, Jim Duncan, Nest Realty Group here in Charlottesville, is there a negative part to quantitative easing?
I think that for looking at it from a, as I do most things, through a consumer perspective, most consumers are going to hear that and tune out for the most part. You talk about the bulk of the marketplace, and they're going to, what I focus on when I look at my analyses, and this conversation is the consumer's confidence. They need to feel confident that those who are making these decisions and using terms such as QE2 are making good decisions. And I don't feel that talking to my clients and my readers on and offline. I don't think that people feel entirely confident that the leadership within the economic realm really have the residential consumer's best interest at heart. So I think that it may be, and I think that it does show some signs of helping the market from a broad perspective. But the boots on the ground, buyers and sellers, it in a large way, it's irrelevant to the purchasing decisions they're making.
Yeah, I agree. The primary focus that we had, that the beneficiary of the anticipated QE2 program was refinancers. We didn't see a huge boom of purchasers.
11:12 here on WNRN's Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. Guests today, Matt Hodges, Jim Duncan, involved in Jim from the Nest Realty Group, Matt from Compass Home Loans. Get your fingers ready, 979-0919. Dial up with your question about local economy, real estate, etc. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Guys, the particular 10 minutes of conversation seem to be national. What about the local part? Because people have often said that Charlottesville, Albemarle anyway, sort of has its own life in comparison to what's going on around the rest of the United States. But we're also talking to people who are living in Lynchburg and Richmond, et cetera. Talk about Central Virginia.
I'll say this. I think that we are moving forward in the evolution that is our local real estate market, Central Virginia and the adjoining regions. I think that we are still doing better than the hot spots that you hear about on the news that are drawing much of the media attention. You know, the California, the Phoenix, the Floridas. Have been utterly decimated, as have some parts of Northern Virginia and different, more metro markets. That being said, I think that our area is seeing more short sales and foreclosures. I mean, I was showing property last weekend, and I'd say a third of the stuff I was showing in the under 300K price range were either short sales or foreclosures. I think that we are moving through the inventory. You're seeing that things are selling, and not just Charlottesville City or Albemarle County, but everywhere. And I think that what we're seeing is that a lot of it's being driven by the burgeoning employment numbers. You're seeing that, at least on the statistical level, that the unemployment numbers seem to be pretty healthy. But you also look at the number of unemployed and the number of people who want to be able to afford something better and are unable to find gainful employment or are left out of the market. You know, I think that, you know, my expectation for 2011 is it's a hopeful expectation that, I'd like to see stagnation of prices.
But you are considered by me, and I think by many, are considered to be a very hopeful gentleman. And I think in your business of being a realtor, from the consumer side, you need to be hopeful.
Well, I think that if I didn't have some hope, I would just degenerate into a woeful pit of misery. And I think that, you know, looking at this from a, you know, not an optimistic point of view, but a reasonably optimistic point of view, and seeing that prices are, would like to think, are moderating, but I think that also, you know, buyers are coming in and they are willing and able to wait. You know, not just in, again, not just in the Charlotte Albemarle area, but the whole region. A lot of people are choosing to rent, and I think that that's one of the trends that I'm seeing. That I'm not sure, and I would wager nobody knows what really is going to happen. But I think that one of the trends that we're going to see pick up in 2011 is the desire to be mobile and have a mobile workforce of people who don't necessarily want to put down roots, who want to be able to pick up and leave and go to other markets and not be tied to, frankly, a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage. And people want to stay for 2 or 3 years, see if they like it, and then move on somewhere else. And I think that that's something that's going to impact our market perhaps more than others, because we have historically been a transient region for large part, you know, due to the university's influence, as well as the growing DIA and the always NJIC and State Farm and our big employers. But I think that you're seeing that a lot of people just desire to be mobile, and I think that that's as yet unknown. And I think that my conclusions for that are going to come in, you know, 18 to 36 months, when we are able to look back in hindsight and say, well, you know, that was pretty accurate, that people do want to be, you know, able to pick up and go somewhere else.
All right, let's take a call. And we have Joe from Stanton. Hey, Joe.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm all right. You got a question or a comment?
Well, it's kind of a twofold comment. First off, nomadic type of folks, I think that's a product of the nomadic type of jobs that we're able to keep or not keep relatively. I think that's not a driver for an individual, because if an individual likes an area, they're going to like to stay there, but they're following their jobs, not necessarily following their whims. And also, earlier you talked about credit scores and the ability to get a good rate, and I think that there's a third class that's being created after this bubble, and those are the people that had great credit to begin with, had great jobs, had great houses, everything was going along fine, lost their jobs the point is, to make the long story of it, is that they had great credit until this short period of time, and then now it's not, and they can't qualify for a decent rate. And those are the types of homeowners that are going to be in the market for medium-priced homes.
Yeah, Joe.
Entry-level, but they can't qualify for anything other than an entry-level home.
Joe, you make an excellent point. I talked to a client or a potential client earlier this week who has a score just over 620, and that typically, historically, had been an acceptable credit score. Now it isn't. For FHA, many lenders have instituted a 640 minimum. And the issue with his credit existed more than 18 months ago, but it's still being weighed so heavily by the credit bureaus and then interpreted so poorly by Freddie and Fannie and FHA that at this point I can't do anything for this client, maybe for 6 months, maybe for 12 months. But it was an anomaly. It was a snapshot in time when the market was worse, and now he's fully caught up.
You know, Joe, I also think that, and this is pure speculation on my part, but I think that in time we're going to see, one of two extremes. One is the tightening down of credit and drilling down and making sure that, you know, I don't know, making this up, but nobody with a less than 700 credit score will be able to qualify. Or we're going to see a relaxing of the rules when we look back and realize that, well, you know, millions and millions of Americans had short sales or foreclosures due to this, you know, odd place in our history. And so those who had a short sale or foreclosure will be less stigmatized by the virtue of, you know, what they went through. You know, I think that's a reasonable speculation because banks are going to realize that they have to loan money to make money.
Yeah.
And I could be wrong, but I think that's something we could see.
One other thing that Joe mentioned was the transient nature of jobs. Knight Kiplinger, I think it was last week, published a report that in the year 2014, their speculation is that 50% of all new jobs haven't been created yet. 50% of all jobs that we do have not
15,
yet.
15-1-5-0.
Oh, and I think we add one thing to that. I think that one of the things that does help our region is that people do choose Central Virginia as a destination location where they choose to live, where they will keep their jobs, whether it's in San Francisco or L.A. or Seattle or any of these bigger metropolitan areas. And they're able to bring those jobs or bring their lifestyle here but keep their job elsewhere.
The telecommuting is huge with the number of buyers that I work with that periodically, once a month, once every 2 weeks, actually go back to the home office, but are entrenched in Charlottesville working with a high-speed internet line at their house.
Right.
Where the hell do they live? Because I still have a modem. All right, Joe, thanks for the call, man. All right, other calls are welcome. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. This is Sunday morning wake up call on WNRN. Markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Mostly sunny and windy today. Highs 30 to 35. Colder in the valley, warmer in Richmond. Cloudy tonight, lows right around 20 degrees. 13 in the valley, 14 in Lynchburg. Sunday, sunny morning, cloudy afternoon. Tomorrow, 30% chance of snow in Lynchburg. And right now, it's a nice day out there. 27 in the valley, 25 in Lynchburg, 31 in Richmond, 29 in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And let's thank Blue Ridge Graphics for everything they do for NRN. You can find Blue Ridge Graphics at Meade Avenue and East High Street in Charlottesville, providing custom T-shirts and sportswear, plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746. Online, it's brgtshirts.com. I also need to thank Dixon Disposal. Dixon reminds you that you can reduce household garbage by purchasing products with reuse and recycling in mind. Small changes in your lifestyle can keep our planet green for years to come. When Dixon's picks up your trash, they sort and separate it for recycling. You can help the planet stay green with curbside service from Dixon Disposal at your home or business. That's 978-2111 or DixonDisposal.com. And we also need to take a second and remind you that Piedmont Virginia Community College's spring semester classes begin on Tuesday the 18th. You can prepare for a new career or update your job skills or just save big by starting your bachelor's degree at PVCC. You can get more info and register online, pvcc.edu. Call them on the phone, 977-3900. Again, semester begins Tuesday the 18th. You can shine at PVCC. All right, dial up the phone lines if you'd like. Matt Hodges, Jim Duncan, as we talk about local housing and the economy, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. We've already heard from Joe in Stanton. You can also participate in today's program. Guys, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac was mentioned earlier by Matt, I believe. They really have received a bad reputation from the last year or two. Are there changes upcoming that, as someone who doesn't follow this area of conversation, but so much, Congress has said how things need to change, how we need to get rid of these, or you know, reinterpret what their jobs are to be. Is that just because of the things that are have happened and someone needs to get a blame, or is it truly out of time and out of context for what they used to do, and they do need this?
I would say that we are looking in our rearview mirror. The issues that we had are historical at this point. When I look back to about 12 years ago when I first entered the mortgage world, I went up to a Freddie Mac conference in Bethesda, and they introduced this new product called Loan Prospector Accept Plus. And Loan Prospector had been around, but Accept Plus was this new finding. Somebody that had at least a 700 credit score, at least a 10% down payment, could get a unlimited result, meaning that your debt to income could be more than 100%. You could have more money going out the door each month than coming in on paper and still get approved because, hey, you're never going to be delinquent. You're never going to get foreclosed upon. You've got good credit. Well, we look back and we say, you know, there's two huge assumptions that were incorrect there. One is that the data that they were basing this on was all on full documentation loans. Okay, where somebody had to prove all of the things that existed, income, asset, credit, and collateral. The second is that property values never decline. Of course, when property values do decline, then you do have defaults, whether they be strategic or truly because the economy is hurting. So when we look back in time, yes, Fannie and Freddie did a lot of things that were not healthy for our housing industry. And for that reason, Asian markets that buy a lot of mortgage-backed securities have always been invested in Ginnie Mae's. Okay, now Ginnie Mae is the provider for VA and FHA loans, which never had stated programs, which never let their debt-to-income ratios get too high. And consequently, today, they're still better priced than Fannie and Freddie loans are. It's a just a testament for what our industries have gone through, how they're perceived today, how they were perceived historically. But I think there's a lot of positives here.
You know what? When you tell that story, what I think of is the good-looking kids really didn't grow up to do anything, but the smart girl with a good personality is the one who you should have invested in when you were in high school all along. That's what I have in my mind.
Fantastic analysis.
But you know, you're welcome to use that, by the way.
In the past two, say 3 years, Fannie and Freddie have done a lot of the right things to right their ship. They have provided appraiser independence, which means that as a loan officer, I can't call the appraiser and say, you know what, I really think that this value should be coming in at X, which was part of the issue, is that there were leading values higher. That the unlimited debt-to-income ratios we talked about with Freddie Mac and even Fannie Mae going up to 65% debt-to-income. That the new good faith estimate disclosure, while I don't particularly like the format that it's in right now, at least it provides additional assurance and protection for the consumer. The loan level pricing adjustments, well, again, we talked about that earlier. It does differentiate somebody that has had a great credit history and be able to provide them with the best interest rates. So Fannie and Freddie have done a lot of the right things in the last 3 years.
Jim, bring this down to the housing market, because for many people, including myself, this is all something that you can see on the front page of the Wall Street Journal. This is the 3 minute business section in your, you know, evening news. But what the heck does it have to do with me thinking about buying a home or the home that I have and am trying to sell to someone else?
Unfortunately, an awful lot. And I think that one of the things that I'll point out here, two things I made notes on. One, I think, you know, recently I saw data saying that 9 out of 10 of the loans that are made are backed by the federal government in some fashion, which is, you know, terrifying that our federal government is that involved in the daily lives of at least 90% of Americans on that level. And the second thing is on the loan level pricing. The key thing that to a buyer or seller that I want them to understand is that what that means specifically to you when you're shopping for a home, or those calculators you see that you see online that help you determine what you can qualify for and what interest rates you're going to get, et cetera, are in short terms are kind of crap, because you're not going to qualify necessarily for the absolute best rate because you might not have a 850 credit score.
Or 740.
Or 740. You know, so you, or you might have 729 or 739, which when you hit that threshold, you know, that's when you bump down in the rates that you're going to get.
Well, what's the what is the average credit score?
Oh, nationwide? It's probably somewhere in the 680 range, but it's irrelevant to us because there's no national temperature. What matters is the person in front of you and what they can do and how we can improve their situation. One of the tools I have is something called Rapid Rescore. For things that are inaccurate or things that we need to fix on a credit history, I can do that legally to help somebody improve their buying power, their interest rate.
But so somebody who's made the mistake, the other Richard Moore's, you know, poor, you know, thing where they didn't pay off their car loan, has been stuck on me for by error. You can fix that.
Oh, absolutely. Within 48 hours, typically.
All right.
Let me go back to that. I mean, one, I think that seeing a heat map of the credit scores of Central Virginia would be pretty awesome.
Yes.
But second thing, I think that what it means to, you know, bringing it back down to the level of buyer and seller is they need to get involved with a professional to help guide them through this. And this is clearly it's a self-serving opinion, but it's something I really and truly believe, that they need to find somebody that they trust to ask these questions of and say, what do I do if I have this? Or where should I go from here? Or even, what are the best 10 websites for me to look at to get me prepared to buy or sell? Because those of us who do this for a living, frankly, have a better perspective on what's real and what's valuable information than you can get from going to Google. And I tried to go to Google to look at something this morning, and it was completely and totally worthless results. So ask somebody you trust.
And if this is the person you want to start with, Jim Duncan, Nest Realty Group, go to his blog, realcentralva.com, not necessarily to ask you the question, but because you're very good about providing links to asking the question yourself, doing a little research and saying, this is kind of where it got me started to go gather the answers that I found interesting, mm-hmm. Not that says, come see Jim Duncan. It says, if you have more interest in finding this, here's the link, and that's what I find most valuable about going to realcentralva.com. Jim Duncan from Nest Realty Group, Matt Hodges, president of Compass Home Loans, also with us today, having the conversation about local housing, mortgage, and just some economy questions. 979-0919-1877 WNRN Rocks. That's a toll-free number if you want to call us up. Jim, we were talking a little bit. Let me bring it down to a more local economic question in general, because it's not all just about housing and how to buy a house. It's also about where the houses are located and some of the infrastructure that goes with that. And to me, that has been one of the – as someone who's pretty much on the outside just looking and going, what the heck? A lot of the – to me, much of what is being built are not new homes but new businesses and not new sewage pipes and not new roadway lanes. So the businesses that are being built are having an ever smaller slice of the pizza pie because there are no new homes being built to bring them new customers. There's the article about the new Albemarle Place, which now has a new name, going up in a place where the new they're going to add traffic to one of the worst intersections in the world at 4:30 p.m. on a work day. Chat a little bit about this and your opinion and the customers that you work with. And am I just full of myself?
No, I think we'll worry about the infrastructure in Charlottesville, Albemarle in 25 or 60 years, just so that somebody else has to worry about it. No, I think that one of the things that we're challenged with is really multi-headed answer. Is one, I think that we do have traffic in Charlottesville, Albemarle, and the surrounding area, and it is by our standards bad. One of the challenges we face with are my buyers coming in is they some of them scoff at our traffic because they're coming from other markets that have, you know, DC and, you know, New York traffic, and what we have is relatively minor. That being said, I think that, you know, and I wrote this the other day, and this is where I sort of differ from some of my peers within the real estate and development community, is I think that it's irresponsible to build and build and build, you know, businesses and houses and not make some sort of concession immediately for the amount of traffic and infrastructure, and specifically, and this is, again, self-serving. I'd like to see more pedestrian-oriented and walkable and bike lanes to be considered when you're making these improvements. But specifically to the former Albemarle place or Stonefield or what I forget the name of it now, you know, that's at the corner of Hydraulic and 29, that's a dangerous intersection. It's consistently backed up even at, you know, 9:30 in the morning and 12:30 and 4:30. It's always a challenge. And in my opinion, adding merely another lane there, a deceleration lane and or a traffic light, is not going to do much to alleviate what is soon to be a tremendous traffic increase. But I think that you're right. When you look at, you know, the traffic issues that we're having, the infrastructure issues that we're having, you know, look at the 29 North, Hollymead, et cetera. A lot of my people who are coming here who don't work at DIA or NJIC or the Research Park or in that sort of subsection of our community, they will shun that area specifically because they don't want to deal with that traffic on a day-to-day basis. And they are focusing on other parts of the region, specifically because the traffic there has been so irresponsibly managed.
I don't know. It just seems as though that our area, which claims to be full of intelligent people, thinking of the children in our area when it comes to education, wanting to have sharp and different retail, have made just such irregular, unfair, poorly designed decisions in a handful of areas.
Well, I mean, I think that one of the challenges, and again, we have a lot of them, is getting the different localities and leadership teams to agree and work together. You look at the infrastructure challenges we have with the water supply and the dam or the no dam or the pipeline or the no pipeline and the, you know, the roads, you know, between Charlottesville and Albemarle. And it seems, just from my perspective, that we don't have, for whatever reason, we don't have the incentive or the intestinal fortitude to build what needs to be built and to do what's right. It seems like everything that's done from a leadership perspective, it seems to be kicking down the road to the next person who's going to be in charge. But I think that we need to look at it from a holistic way and say, this is where we want our place to be in 20 years or 25 years or 5 years, and this is how people are going to communicate. But I think that the Meadow Creek Parkway is, you know, unfortunately, one of the best examples. It's been discussed for 60 years. And, in my opinion, the reason it's being pushed forward is because it's been pushed for 60 years, fighting the city of Charlottesville and the Albemarle County. But if that road were – if that question were to be asked today of what would you do to make transportation work, I don't know if the Meadow Creek Park would be the ideal solution. You know, I just think that it's a battle that's been fought for so long, and there's so much invested in that we have to build it. And in my opinion, it's just a road that has to be built, you know, tomorrow. But I think that if we were able to come to a decision and implement a solution, you know, I don't know, in 5 to 10 years, and rather than 60, we would be better off moving around our region. But one of the things that you're seeing is that by virtue of the traffic issues that we're facing, we're becoming more segmented of a community. I mean, my view, I look at the 29 North Green Albemarle area is one subsection of the community. The Pantops area is a subsection where people don't want to go unless they have to go there for a vet or something. And, you know, and Crozet is self-sufficient, and 29 20 South are will be self-sufficient eventually. But it's because it's so difficult to move around the area. You know, getting in from Lake Monticello is a challenge on good days. I think we really do have some issues that we need to face. And until we have the leadership that's focused on getting stuff done rather than getting elected, I think that we're going to continue to have challenges from a constituent point of view.
Well, and for those who are out there saying, why are you just talking about it? Why don't you do something about it? I can't decide where I'm going to go for dinner most nights, which is why I don't run for office. I just try and discuss the topic with others, such as Matt Hodges, president of Compass Home Loans, Jim Duncan, Nest Realty Group. We're talking about how the economy is affecting Charlottesville, Albemarle, Central Virginia, and some of these parts which are part of our economy and our politics as well. 11:40 here on the Wake Up Call.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
And the details of the Biscuit Run deal are at last emerging thanks to a Deep Throat source. Who's a winner and who's a loser in the mega deal that give us a state park but maybe draining taxpayers more than earlier thought? Dr. Hook explores lower back pain. And what are some of the consequences if we do away with the penny, as some movements would like to have happen? The Hook, handcrafted every week. And let's thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports, now featuring the Columbia OmniHeat, a waterproof down jacket with 700 fill power to provide protection from wet and cold weather. Columbia OmniHeat jackets are available at Blue Ridge Mountain Sports, the outdoor store that knows the outdoors. And support for today's programming also comes from Ben Around Tattoos in Charlottesville and downtown Waynesboro. They feature male and female tattoo artists. Ben Around Tattoos has thousands of designs available and can create work from a design that you provide. Piercing is also available. Ben Around Tattoos in downtown Waynesboro in Charlottesville at 701 West Main Street. Online, benaroundtattoos.com. And you should know by now, lots of radio stations and other music sources out there, but only one that brings you a program like The Wake Up Call. And the only reason we can do this is because of listeners like Irene Burlock, Chester and Hound Incorporated, and Brenda Clement Jones, all who supported us during the fund drive this past fall. Also because of program underwriters, the ones you're hearing now, as well as Market Street Wine Shop and Stereotype. So stay tuned, tell a friend about The Wake Up Call and other programming you enjoy here on NRN, and be sure to support us in the next fund drive coming up in March. All right, back to our guests, Matt Hodges, Jim Duncan. Guys, let's talk about just strictly housing and a few numbers here in this area. Jim, 2010 was supposed to be everything getting a little bit better from 2008 and 2009. You used the word stagnant a few times. Are there more homes available? And Matt, have you seen more people trying to come for a home loan?
I'll give you a quick update on where we were December 2010. Just looking at the Charlottesville MSA, which is Charlottesville, Albemarle, Fluvanna, Green, Nelson, and kind of Louisa. They're not technically in our MSA, but for all practical and functional purposes, they are. In our region, in December, there were 1,738 homes on the market, and there were previous year there were 1,671. Actually, believe it or not, the monthly sales, at least through the Charlottesville MLS, were exactly the same. 116 homes sold in those respective Decembers. And yeah, I think that what that means to the person who's shopping is there are about 14 months of inventory of homes that are out there, which is the amount of time it's going to take to churn and burn through that inventory. From a buyer perspective, you know, it means that there's a lot of stuff to choose from, and they need to go through the process of choosing what they want and what they don't want and look from a location standpoint.
14 months. That seems like, to me, that seems like an awful lot. I mean, what and I recognize that 5 years ago, things were being put on the market and sold within a week. But let's go back a decade or so, and how is there normality for how long what length of time that percentage, you know, what was the proper phrase you used? The length of time on the market
to the months of inventory.
Yes, months of inventory.
I think that one, I have no idea what normal is anymore. It's a shifting concept. And two, you know, I think, you know, by the traditional definition, 6 months, give or take, is a balanced real estate market. So if you have 6 months of inventory, that's about the reasonable number of months. I mean, back in the hot market, you know, the months of inventory is maybe, you know, 1 or 2 months. But you also look back and there's, you know, in the, you know, 07, we were looking at 15 months of inventory, and, you know, you had range in 08 of anywhere from 8 months based on the number of sales per month, and that was actually in June, to 25 months of inventory in November of 08. So it really does fluctuate when you're looking at the months of inventory. And realistically as well, I mean, that doesn't matter necessarily to the buyers looking for a house in Belmont, or the buyers looking for a house up in Greens, who's going to be working at DIA. They don't care so much about the number of inventory, the number of months of inventory. They care about the price of that home, what its 5-year, 10-year history has been of appreciation and or depreciation, and whether it suits them and how long they're going to be in that house. So I think that, you know, you look at, you know, this stuff does matter from a micro macro level point of view, but for the buyer or seller of a home, it's not quite white noise, but it is, you know, sort of ancillary to the conversation that sort of frames the total decision making process that they are undergoing.
Are there neighborhoods, and I use that in a, you know, more than just Mr. Rogers version, you know, Crozet versus Hollymead, et cetera. Are there particular neighborhoods that are full of inventory or very low on inventory because they've become the popular place to be?
Yes, I mean, yes, there are. I mean, there are places that are more desirable than others, and what I'll do is, rather than answer that on air, I'll answer that question this week in a story where I sort of break down the top 10. But yeah, I mean, there are, and I think it's, but if, and there are places that are chosen by buyers, but more than anything else, it's not driven specifically by the neighborhood, but it's driven by proximity to stuff. You know, how close is X neighborhood to my school or my work or soccer fields and grocery stores? So it's really more along the lines of where are these people coming from and where are they coming to work and live. But, yeah, I mean, you know, broad terms, I think that the whole of Albemarle County and Charlottesville are as popular as they ever have been. It's just what is going to be closest to stuff for that particular buyer.
Do you have people moving into town? Because for a long time it was people who worked in Charlottesville, Albemarle, couldn't afford to live here, so they lived at Lake Monticello. They lived in Luvana or Louisa or Nelson. Green, as you mentioned, not actually fitting into the numbers, but being in the realistic part of what's going on. Are more people selling their homes there, if possible, and moving into town because the price of the more central homes have dropped?
It's a great question. I mean, we saw a period during the boom when I looked at my numbers, and, you know, 80% of people were coming from other areas. And then we had a time when nobody was buying. And now I am seeing some people who are looking to sell their existing home, and either, frankly, I've seen a lot of people trading down from a square footage standpoint, and they're looking at it from a much longer term point of view. But you know, the number of people who are coming from other areas to Charlottesville is increasing, and realistically, a lot of that is tied to the DIA growth up 29 North. And they've had you know, a significant impact on our market that I think that had that not been here, and granted, it's not as tremendous of an impact as it might have been sold to us, but I think that they have had a significant stabilizing impact on the Charlottesville real estate market.
Matt Hodges, president of Compass Home Loans, we're talking about the properties, but none of that can happen to these folks if they can't get and make the finances work for it. You talked about having the credit score having gone up, and what used to be a score that pretty much allowed you to do most anything now having to have a better score to make that happen. But what about the people who are coming to see you? Have you, are you failing to even see certain types of socioeconomic status? Are you having to make particular things work and, you know, find all the little twists and turns to make it happen that before was just a nice, easy turn the paper over and have it signed? Or turn the 42 papers over and have them signed when it comes to home buying and titles.
No, we definitely have challenges that we address on a daily basis. I would say from a purchase standpoint that we don't have, or at least I don't see, that many clients that come in that cannot get financing. I do see it a good bit on rental pulls, because I do that as a service to realtors, is the rental clients that oftentimes I'm pulling credit for have very poor credit, and they know that they can't even get into the mortgage world, and they're having a great challenge even getting into the rental world. One of the things you asked earlier is about volume, and I definitely saw in 2010 that the volume picked up for purchase business. Into 2011, I'm seeing quite a few buyers, and they're being smart. Jim referenced this already, but they are looking for that purchase that is a very good value. It isn't 5 years ago when houses sold in 7 days and you better jump on something quickly, regardless of what the history says that house is worth. Now they're being very careful, and they're extrapolating out what this house means to them today. And then further, what Jim was talking about with DIA, they are providing a great stabilizing force. The volume and the business we do with DIA, NJIC, and the contractors, the CACIs, the SAIC, the Booz Allen Hamilton, all those people is tremendous. And most importantly with them is they've got government clearances, which means that their credit scores are fantastic. They have to be.
Let me push back on, not push back, but to talk about one other thing is, you know, one of the things I'm finding that I'm really grateful to see is that people who are coming here to live are, they now, because of this market, they now have the time to do their due diligence, both from a data analytical standpoint, looking at the trends and the values and prices per square foot, et cetera, which is what I help facilitate them. But they're buying for better sociological reasons as well. I mean, they're buying because they want to put down roots. They want to live here for a number of years. And so we have time to spend in neighborhoods and areas and do, you know, test runs between work and home, which is really, really nice to be able to tell people, yes, go do these six things. Make sure you're comfortable doing it on a day-to-day basis because the house will most likely still be here. Whereas, you know, 6-7 years ago, if we looked at a house, we might have had 20 or 30 minutes to decide that we had to put something in immediately or else it was gone. So I think that that's something that is, you know, housing has always been, you know, from a residential real estate standpoint, has been a place for people to put down roots and have been to become part of a community. And we're seeing more community building and growth now. And it sounds contrived, but it's real that people know their neighbors. They care about their schools. They care about the community. And that, you know, the volume is down, you know, looking at the, you know, the number of transactions, you know, 5 years ago or 4 years ago, we had 2,000 annual transactions. This closing 2011, we had 1,600, give or take. So the number of transactions is down, but I would say that the quality of people who are buying for 5 to 10 years, or the number of people buying for a long time frame, is greater. And I think that we're going to see the benefits of that in 5 to 7 years, when you have had kids who've been able to go through, you know, elementary to high school. And I think that's something we haven't seen in our area for at least 10 years.
11:53 here on the Wake Up Call, winding down our hour with Jim Duncan from Nest Realty Group and his blog, RealCentralVA.com. Matt Hodges, president of Compass Home Loans. Les Temps-Purdue will be up at noon, so don't go anywhere. Drew Thompson just walked in the door. Modern rock from the 80s and 90s. And let me thank Sugar Snap for allowing all this to happen today. They offer gently used baby and kids items, including outerwear, shoes, crib bedding, and maternity clothes. You can also find cloth diapers and nursery gear. There's a kid-friendly play area available while you shop. You can become a fan of Sugar Snap on Facebook or Twitter and find them in the Real Building, Shoppers World, near Whole Foods. Matt, we were talking about people and the financing. Is the length of time for financing any longer or shorter? If the credit score, I mean, because for many people, the joke is there about how many pieces of paper you sign, how long it takes to go. In fact, it took longer to do the paperwork than it did to actually buy the house for a time period.
It really depends. I had three transactions last year that closed in less than 18 days. Those are anomalies, but it's because of the arrangement I have with my lender. I've got two dedicated underwriters, and if I need something underwritten the next day, they'll do it. But that isn't true across the industry. There are major players out there who are quoting 90 to 120 days for underwriting. So there is no, there's no standard there at all.
We are listening to WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. It is 11:55 here on the Wake Up Call. You know, we didn't jump into this too much, but I feel that I need to ask the question about robo-signing. That was a national issue where the news is the many, many, many people who had their homes foreclosed upon because of some things that were, I don't know that they were evil, dirty deeds, but certainly things not done properly by banks and financing. Matt?
Yeah, I think that the robo issue is a bit blown out of proportion. Generally, and there are exceptions to this, but generally, if there was a foreclosure that occurred, it was because the borrower was behind by the precise amount of time that it took to get to a foreclosure notice, and that notices were in circulation in the general newspaper of that area, that notice was sent to the borrower, that the trustee auction occurred correctly. That being said, there can always be an anomaly, an issue with a specific client, and that is going to gain media attention, as it should. I think that the robo-signing is a bit blown out of proportion.
Any of that happen to you or anyone that you, any business folks that you know?
No, I haven't seen any of that here.
We have 3 minutes, so I think we can cover this whole thing pretty quickly. I have a slightly different opinion on that. I think that, one, I haven't seen any of the robo-signing stuff in our market. But I think that that's going to be one of the biggest stories, not just the robo-signing, but the title, the transfer of title and the conveyance of clear and marketable title. I think that's going to be one of the biggest stories of 2011. That speaks to property ownership and the chain of title, and it, whether these banks and buyers actually have the legal right to, one, foreclose on a property, because they might not have actually taken that title legally, when you look at the chain of title correctly. And I think the buyers need to be very aware of this and make sure that they have good local attorneys doing the title search and title history. I mean, I think that, you know, and again, I'll have all these links and you know, just, you know, snippets of everything we've talked about on my blog later. But I think that it's that the title and foreclosures is going to be a giant story of 2011, and it's something that at the very least the realtors should be aware of, and the buyers and sellers need to be extraordinarily cognizant of, because it's going to, I think it's going to be very, very big.
Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rick.
Matt Hodges, President, Compass Home Loans. Jim Duncan from Nest Realty Group. And again, this show will be podcast on SeavillePodcast.com. And Jim will have some links to a lot of the conversation today on his RealCentralVA.com blog. All right. Next week, we will be talking to folks from Chesapeake Bay Foundation about the Chesapeake Bay and a part of the bay that not everyone knows about, Menhaden. Menhaden is much like the algae of, it's a small fish that makes the bay survive. So tune in next week for that. And just want to finish up by sending best wishes to friends and listeners, Pete and Carrie. They had to make the decision on when to put down the dog, and that's a very difficult decision, and they made their decision yesterday. Thomas had a fun life and a proud goodbye, and in the end, Thomas can say that bacon tastes good.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@AOL.com or at wakeupcall@WNRN.org. The Wake Up Call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.